MGTOW man, welcome back. So the man that society praises, as we know, is the man that appears the most useful. It's hypergamy, societal hypergamy, individual relational hypergamy. We know about this. The most useful man isn't the best, and obviously we could go into defining what the best means, and often it isn't even the most necessary person or necessary skills or necessary attributes. It sounds weird, but it's true. Men are realizing this, obviously in MGTOW, but I think just overall, and especially with the proliferation of general red pill content. So what's a man to do and what's a man to value? So many men are going through a neural rewiring right now, which is coming to MGTOW or coming to these red pill ideas, stumbling upon them. And sometimes it causes a lot of pain if somebody's not ready for it, a lot of confusion, a lot of cloudiness, and often depression. I know for me, it was something I had been looking for. So at that point, I would say I was ready for this information. But I'm going to talk about recognizing some of the causes for depression in regards to the red pill rage and whether or not you deal with it and how you deal with it. And there's a huge archive of content on YouTube relating to red pill rage, as it's been connoted, I think, in the MGTOW community for the first time by, it might have been Sandman, I could be wrong. Regardless, I've talked about it. I've talked about red pill rage specifically. I've talked about depression, which is linked to red pill rage. Anger and depression are linked to people's experiences and mind. And of course, I've talked about the flip side, which is self-actualization, freedom too. So where does this red pill depression come from? So behind red pill rage, I often believe, at least some of the time, is this feeling that you can't generate enough purpose in your life now to justify your moving forward. So I don't think that this is discussed a lot within MGTOW, this idea that when you go your own way, what also tends to happen alongside accepting the red pill is that you feel as if there may not be enough constraints going on in your life, positive constraints. We tend to hit lulls as people when they are not feeling purposeful enough, they're not usually having the positive constraints going along with that purpose. It relates to the dichotomy between first world and third world happiness levels. So if that's the case, part of removing red pill rage and the impending depression is feeling threatened. So how can you create a place where you have manageable and seemingly purposeful threats throughout your day and your life that you are fueled by, are overwhelmed by, and in a sense, sustained by? I don't know. I think that's something that you have to think about and figure out. How am I going to conjure up this drive within me? So I was spurred on to discuss this today because of a comment. And the comment reads, I am not in bad shape, but the red pill rage sent me into a deep depression for 3 years. I stopped working out. I gained a little bit of weight and I lost interest in my hobbies. And the interesting thing right here, he said, I'm not in bad shape, but I almost first went past the physical shape. I thought about his mind, his mental shape. Where is he at? He goes on, it's not as bad now, but I still dip in and out of it. I feel like I can't do anything anymore and no logic can break it. I found my own mother didn't love me when I was 11, and now every girl is the same after hitting 18. And now when he's 18, I think he's trying to say, will it ever go for good? Will it ever go for good? So as we know, men are human doers, and I'll get to kind of touch on this comment in a second. Men are human doers and are at risk for depression when their doing is removed. So if they have no incentive to do, then they will either hunt for a new one immediately, or they will hit a low point and find themselves to be meaningless, listless, not productive, and generally not needed. So men desire to be needed. We know this. We're trying to scale back that desire because sometimes it's an insatiable and probably dangerous desire. And it's another thing that's ingrained in our DNA. God knowing that we are equipped with the physical ability, mental faculties, intellect to handle work, and to aid when needed. We always want to be useful, even if that ends up getting us into situations in which we are used. We like being a utility. We like being able to open the pickle jar for our girlfriend and be able to push the random car out of the ditch. Silly looking back on it. But when you go your own way, you exit this giver and taker exchange. You eject yourself from it. Why? This is why. In a relationship between a man and a woman, the man innately understands that the things that he does away from the bedroom are the things that allow him to get what he wants in the bedroom. The conquests on the battlefield matter for the man on two levels. When he's fighting the enemy, he's firing arrows, he's swinging the longsword around, swinging the axe, the mace, fist fights, killing his foes. What he is doing is he's killing the enemy so that he can stay alive longer, but he's also earning the interest of the female. This drives a lot of men. They're not able to separate these two drives. Okay, he's inspired to earn the interest of the female so that he performs better on the battlefield. He survives. Sometimes that fuels him forward. And he eventually gets two prizes. A chance to have more breaths and a chance to have sex and reproduce. So battle and reproduction are closely related. Work and sex are closely related. This is because they balance each other out in a sense, and they allow for the other to have a chance to exist. So numbers-wise, war throughout history, as bad as it sounds, was a population manager, and it was also another DNA natural order way for the world to see what in the gene pool was the strongest. The strongest gene pool gets to reproduce. It gets to have the woman, then the babies come, the next generation's stronger, and apparently you get to take pride in the fact that you were stronger. You get to pass your name down. But in that, there's a giving and a taking relationship. The man is giving up life, potentially. He's giving up time. He's sacrificing. He's putting himself on the edge. So he's giving. It's all about giving. And then he gets this one little small thing, just this one little fleeting thing to take, which is sex. And once he takes that, he's expected to give again. So talking about work, work exists to support that which he's taking. The more that you take, the more that you have an output, or the more that you have to work. It's basic. That's why the more that you take in terms of the modern definition of it, cars, dates, fancy meals, vacations, homes, timeshares, definitely kids in a wedding, the more that you say, honey, I'm willing to work and I'm willing to put my nose to the grindstone for you and for this. Okay, a man that has this demand to give because he has already taken will often possess a far more survival-based drive to work than the man that's doing it for self-actualization or just because it has something to fill his time with. It's something that might lead to another opportunity, or it's a way to break up his day, so he's going to do it. There are these two funnels, these two paths towards pursuing something in this freedom too that is going to get you past the depression. You've got to shake being connected to the fact that the world usually tells you to pursue those things because they got a gun at your head, that you got to provide for the family, the kids, and for society's expectations. Now it has to come from within. I don't know what you have to do to get there, but this is a change. This is a paradigm shift, and some men never prepared for this. So if you get that dude and he's got three kids, he's got a mortgage, their college, a wife, her happiness, and insurance to cover, he's going to take that job as a mailman, and he's going to stick with it and grind through it through sub-zero temperatures because he thinks at the end of the day, he's entered into this give-and-take agreement, and the reality is he's created this because of his wants. Or he's like, I get to go home to my warm house and my family, if that even ends up being a good thing. So basically, that's a life that is based out of wants. The MGTOW life for many men is based out of a life of letting go. But when you get to that point, you often don't have the motivation. You don't have the willingness to persist with things. And thus, you end up getting very selective. So I won't need to pay for this, so I won't worry about this. I don't need to impress anyone for this, so I won't worry about this stress. Okay, this is because you've exited the give and take exchange that demands sacrifice and often our disposability. So weirdly, and this is all related to the rage. The rage has to do with the new void that's created. So weirdly, since a man was wired for an element of that, he doesn't just want to enter into it today because results are guaranteed. Okay, he is going to feel some earth-based biological depression because of this. So what do you do? How do you deal with this? Can you deal with this? How are you supposed to think about this? What are you supposed to do with your time? How are you supposed to handle yourself and your newly acquired emotions and outlook on life? Well, I know how I would, and considering I never went through a red pill rage stage, it may be quite different for you. Other reasons that you enter into red pill rage. So in TFM's Red Pill Rage series, particularly in the video he discusses regarding grief, linked to suicide and depression, TFM discusses how if you have never been through red pill rage, that means that you're likely still in denial. He doesn't think that it's a hard rule, though, as each person has a different past, each person has different goals, and we each have different personality traits. For me, myself, I really hardly get angry. It's very hard for me to be angry. And I'm very, very hard to get to that point. And instead, what I usually experience when other people are feeling anger is I look within and I do some soul searching. I'm very introspective. And if anything, I might be mildly depressed. So TFM discusses that he felt that the rage was produced because at that time it brought him to a place of a loss of meaning. I don't know exactly what the meaning entailed, but I know for some people, it's probably the quote-unquote traditional things promised in Western culture, discussed with MGTOW spheres that are either lost or forfeited when a man goes his own way. Things like having kids, having a wife, being a father, being a husband, working for our prosperity and the nice home and the Escalade to support the clan and be productive in that sense and provide for all of subdivision travel soccer. So the only time that it would be painful to lose those things is if those are things you wanted. The only time when you lose something and it hurts to lose it is if you wanted it. You will only feel anger about something if there is something else you wanted but you can't have, or if you can still have it, but you choose not to have it because of self-protection, only because it's been tarnished and ruined by some other force, which is really society today. So what might also influence the rage is a loss of something that you wanted, as I said. And I saw another video, and the video focused on this idea of being in a perpetual state of hate. The guy was talking about being fueled by hate. He hated the world so much that he had wanted to succeed and prove the world wrong about the things that he had been wronged on. Either things that the world's wronged him of, or, you know, things that were taken away. So he's got hate inside of him. He's been abused and walked over in the past. And the thing about hate is that it's addictive. And if people don't have it stirring inside of them, what often ends up happening is this massive vacuum is created. They get bored. They don't know how to find purpose outside of the hate and the anger that they're usually relying on. The thing about hate and anger is that it allows for sprinting. And some people would rather sprint than they would run a marathon. People think that they can sprint through life, and that's the problem. You can't do that. You can only jog. If you use Red Pill Rage like you took a power-up in Mario Kart and blasted off with some CCs, you'd feel high. You might get in first place for a minute, but are you going to be in first place when the finish line comes? I don't know when your finish line is. I don't know what the point of this whole racing is in your mind anyway. The race is against yourself. No one cares at the end of the day. No one's going to pay attention. They've got their own problems and their own worries. And to be fueled by hate to prove other people wrong is something that I feel is pretty limiting. That's just my take on it. Anger and rage allows you to sprint. That can be addictive. And it feels like you're touting something and people are taking note. Wow, that guy's really angry. Wonder who pissed him off. I feel bad for him. I'm curious about him. A person in anger often thinks that way and thinks it's true. And if that's what you want, that's fine. But I know for me, when I view MGTOW, I always say this. MGTOW is joy because it's bringing light to the truth. If there's truth there, there's light. And it's also a light burden. The world's a lot less burdensome now. What else would I want? I'm free to do the things that I want to do. I'm in freedom too. Now is time to crack down and think about what is it deep within your soul that you've always wanted to do. You can let the chips roll. Why are we rageful? That's my take. And I understand the rage period. I understand the malaise, as I believe Stardust has put it. But that's just my two cents on this. So thanks for watching, guys. As always, SunriseCity@gmail.com or on Twitter. Sunrise City. Hoodies up, man. Hoodies out.